You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high-quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of five-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 five-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you five-star sleep, the ultra-comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 five-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So when you're ready to score five-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you on another edition of Phillies Today. And man, what an edition of Phillies Today this is going to be, because we are witnessing history right now with the Philadelphia Phillies, and specifically Christopher Sanchez, who we all know is 44 and two-thirds innings scoreless in a row. Unbelievable. Phillies franchise record, a record that stood for 115 years with Grover Cleveland Alexander, who's a Hall of Famer himself. Chris Sanchez breaks that record, and he has been just unfreaking believable for this baseball team. And last year, after we thought that, you know, how could he have a better year than last year? He comes from a guy who was traded for Curtis Meade as a prospect, and you know, no one really ever thought too much of Christopher Sanchez, and he was always all over the place. Command was never there, and has really put it together the last couple of years. And you sort of thought that, you know, last year, that's about as good as it gets probably. And I would be wrong, and everyone who thought that would be wrong, because what we're witnessing right now is truly one of the great runs we have ever seen for a Phillies pitcher. Better than Lee in 2011, you know, better than some of the Carlton runs of the 80s. I mean, we are witnessing one of the greatest individual, I guess, runs here, months, in Phillies franchise history for any player. So just some unbelievable stuff from Chris Sanchez. As I said, breaks a 115-year record. And, like, baseball, that's one of the great things about baseball, is that yesterday, or on Wednesday, I'm recording this on a Thursday because I was so excited to get this out there, but I'm watching this on Wednesday, and, like, it's a game during the day or whatever. I mean, I am on the edge of my seat with every hitter hoping that he can get this record. And the Machado ball, you think that's going out. It makes the play at the wall. And, like, even Bryson Stott, who is one of the most sure-handed second basemen in all of baseball, you know, he gets that ground ball to get the record there. And he's, like, two-handed it. It was almost like to win the World Series or to clinch a no-hitter or something like that. So you could tell everyone was pretty tense. And it was just such a relief off of everybody to get that record. And the guy goes 7 shutout after that. So what more can you say? And he showed some emotion after, which I loved. And he is one of the truly fun players to watch right now in all of baseball, let alone on the Phillies. Just such a joy to watch Christopher Sanchez out there. And mention some more numbers. Longest streak, 44 and two-thirds, like I said, for a left-handed pitcher to go scoreless since 1961. He's the third longest, has the third longest scoreless streak for a left-handed pitcher since 1900. He has 5 consecutive starts of at least 7 shutout, which is also a franchise record. And it's just, the crazy thing is, it's this NL Cy Young race is shaping up to be one of the great Cy Young races in recent memory. And I know we're, you know, just about into June, we're only a couple months in, but what Sanchez is doing, what Shohei is doing, and granted, Shohei doing it with a lot less innings, but Shohei's ERA under 1 right now after he didn't give up a run again on Wednesday night. He is also out of his mind right now, probably a lock for the MVP once again. But you've got Shohei doing that. You've got Mizorowski from the Brewers, just absolutely, he's got 100 strikeouts in like 60-some innings, which is just ridiculous. And he's making a case for him as the Cy Young as well. And another teammate of his, Kyle Harrison, has been unbelievable in the month of May, almost as good as Christopher Sanchez. And I didn't even mention Paul Skeens yet. I didn't even mention Zach Wheeler yet, who ever since coming back from injury has been phenomenal for this Phillies team. So this NL Cy Young race could be awesome. Chris Sale in there too. I mean, you've got some really talented individual pitching performances so far this year, and it's really fun to watch. And I mentioned Zach Wheeler, so talked a lot about Christopher Sanchez. I think we talked about Zach Wheeler a little bit too, because he throws 6 shutout innings against the Guardians over the weekend, and I thought it was really interesting when he was asked postgame, like, about Sanchez and just about the staff as a whole. He said, I mean, we're trying to keep up with that guy, and it is really, really difficult to keep up with him right now. And I think that is kind of what made the 2011 rotation so fun, and what made some of the great rotations ever in baseball so entertaining to watch, is you can tell when they all sort of push each other and try to one-up each other night in and night out. And that is where winning and championship, you know, DNA sort of comes from, by having that, you know, competitiveness within the room and being able to, you know, iron sharpen iron, as they say. So great stuff there. I love that quote from Wheeler. You could tell, like, right when they asked him, he kind of shrugged it off. He's like, man, I don't know. I don't know how to keep up with him. So awesome stuff. And Wheeler's been really, really good since he's come back. And that's sort of where this all started. And obviously you could point to the Thompson firing and hiring Mattingly. And I think Mattingly's done a great job. Like, don't get me wrong. But I think that Zach Wheeler coming back has really sort of stabilized this rotation, allowed everyone to pitch within their roles. And I think that's where we've seen some of the turnaround sort of stem from, where Zach Wheeler returned to the rotation down there in Atlanta a few weeks back. And, you know, speaking of that, I think Luzardo, huge stones, huge balls in that last outing over in San Diego. I thought that, you know, he got really unlucky with some defensive miscues out in the field, and he was able to get around those, pick his teammates up. And, you know, I know that his numbers aren't what we thought they would be, but all the underlying metrics, all the analytics support that he is going to, you know, bounce back, and everything's going to sort of get back to where it's supposed to be in terms of, you know, his numbers over 162, because his stuff is just too good for his numbers not to be what they were last year. And I think that the fastball looks good. Obviously, he's getting the sweeper in on righties, and he's able to get a bunch of swing and miss on that. And I just think that he's in a spot where he just has to pitch more games, and ultimately things are going to start to come together for him. So he's going to pitch out in LA this weekend. It'll be really interesting to see. He was great against the Dodgers in the postseason last year, so that'll be an interesting test for him out there in LA. But another, you know, positive pitching takeaway from the Padres series was Aaron Nola. And I thought that Nola sort of did some interesting stuff against the Padres. And he probably should have got the shutout if Trey Turner makes that play at shortstop. He ends up giving up the homer in the next at-bat. But I thought it was really encouraging from Nola. And I thought the curveball usage was way up. Fastball was down. He was sort of using the fastball as a secondary, which I think he should at this point when you're, you know, hitting 91, 92 at this age, and it doesn't have a ton of life on it. That's sort of the way you have to go. And, you know, against righties, I thought he was just, you know, hitting the outside of the zone, and with the sinker, knuckle curve tunnel, like, he was just, you know, sort of abusing that to the right-handed hitters. And I thought that that was the way to go. And I think that he did a really nice job executing it. I'm sure Caleb Cotham was heavily involved in that, and JT as well. So that was good, I guess, scouting on their part. And I'm interested to see if he sort of keeps that up, or if hitters adjust after watching film, or what ends up happening there. But I thought it was an encouraging outing from Aaron Nola. And look, we probably, you know, we don't know what we're going to get from Aaron Nola on a night-in, night-out basis at this point. You kind of just have to sit there and hope and pray that it goes okay, and he makes some adjustments, and he's able to figure some things out and get them in a spot to where they can win the game. But ultimately, I thought it was an encouraging sign. So interested to see what happens next week. He'll face the Padres again, I believe. He doesn't pitch out in LA this weekend. So we'll be very interested, and we'll be monitoring that as well. So I just talked a lot of good about the pitching. And there's no doubt that I mentioned it this year. If this team was going to go anywhere, if this team, look, they're one game out of the wild card right now. So if this team was going to get back into playoff contention after being 10 games under 500, it was going to be on the backs of the pitching. And it is, because this offense is still not great. And let's get into it right now, because I think there's still a lot of frustrating things with this offense in terms of, you know, just the consistency on our, I guess the consistency is being inconsistent right now, because they're in a spot where they just rely on Schwarber and Harper way too much. And the right-handed hitters, as I've mentioned the last couple of pods, you just aren't getting enough. And I think that, if anything, there was a good takeaway from San Diego was Turner potentially getting hot here. There was an interesting sort of, you know, blurb in Matt Gelb's latest article where he talked about Trey Turner's approach to the plate and how they're kind of trying to shift that around a little bit and change things. And I think that he basically talked about him taking away half of the plate, and if he can do that and sort of hone in on, you know, pitches on the inner half or pitches on the outer half, then he can have a lot of success. I think that those two home runs where he sort of cheated on the fastballs in the, you know, inside part of the plate and was able to sort of, you know, rock those to left field off the Western Metal Supply Company, that was sort of the key to unlocking him a little bit. And I even thought that he had the one ball in the gap in right field that I don't know how Nick Castellanos got to. And by the way, just a real quick thing. On Monday night, I believe it was, on Tuesday night, where Nick Castellanos comes up against Lizardo in the first inning with the bases loaded. If I was just, my butt cheeks were clenched on that one, and I was ready for him to hit that grand slam. Like, I was so nervous. I was like, oh, my God, please don't do this right here. But as I mentioned, Lizardo able to, you know, show off the stones and get a big couple of outs there. And funny thing was, on that Castellanos ground ball, highest sprint speed for him on any, you know, play this year, which showed you how much he wanted to beat out that ground ball. But luckily, still doesn't have the foot speed that you would hope. So anyway, back to Trey. I think that it's a good sign for Trey, obviously, getting a couple homers, just the confidence thing in general. Good on Don Mattingly for tinkering with the lineup a little bit, getting him out of the leadoff spot. Maybe it took a little bit of pressure off him. Who knows? But I think with that new approach, potentially, of him sort of shrinking the zone for himself a little bit, that could potentially unlock some things for Trey. And Trey's always been somebody who goes through the lulls and works really hard to figure things out. Like, he spends a lot of time in the cage after games and trying to figure out his mechanics and tweak some things. So I think that he'll come back around, but it was a really rough start for Trey. So he is going to be that right-handed hitter that they need to sort of, you know, break out of it and come through, because I'm not sure where else that is coming from, because Adolis, brutal. Bohm's smashing balls into the ground as usual. It was a good home run by JT, I will say, in this series. It was nice to see. It was like his hardest hit ball since, I think, what, 2024, I saw. First home run since April 1st. So good sign there for JT. But I think that they really need Trey Turner to be the right-handed bat that sort of gets going for them, or else, you know, they're still probably going to trade for somebody at the trade deadline. But they need any sort of help in this first half they can get from that side of the plate. So I mentioned Schwarber and Harper. Good stuff from them in this series. I thought that Schwarber, I mean, he's on a little four-game hit streak, so he had the RBI single yesterday, which was massive. And I think that he's ultimately in a spot where he's having a weird year where, I mean, he's a ton of homers and strikeouts, which is usual for him. But he's kind of going back to the 2023 type of Schwarber where he wasn't getting a lot of base hits or whatever. Not that I really care about that all that much, considering, you know, if he's going to pop 55 to 60 homers, I'm totally okay with him being somebody who, you know, doesn't get the base hits here and there every so often. But I think that it was a good, encouraging sign that he staying through the baseball, using the field a little bit, and was able to, you know, get a few base knocks in the series and get a little hit streak going. So he's got a four-game hit streak. And Bryce, I mean, that homer the other night, that was smash. It was 113 and a half off the bat, just an absolute laser down the line. When he's pulling baseballs like that, you can tell that he's really in a good spot offensively, and he is, you know, very well could be an all-star this year. So I don't know if what Dave Dombrowski said in the offseason worked or what happened there, but Bryce is looking good from an offensive standpoint, which is really good to see. So last guy I wanted to get to sort of before I head to the bullpen a little bit, because I definitely have something interesting with the bullpen that has come up, I think, on Twitter a little bit, and I just really would like to put to bed, honestly.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
The last thing I want to talk about is Justin Crawford a little bit, because I think we've reached a spot with Justin Crawford where people were so anxious to get any sort of change within the lineup that they possibly could. And he brings a different element to the lineup, obviously, with the, you know, putting balls in play, the speed, and that sort of thing there. But I don't want to say that, like, I'm not a full believer in Justin Crawford, because I would like them to give him as much runway as possible to see if he can win the center field job and be somebody who can hit towards the bottom of the lineup and generate some stuff with the speed and whatnot. But I'm a little concerned just that the ground ball rate stuff for the minors is really, it's just part of his game that probably will never escape him. And he is hitting a lot of balls into the ground. He was on an 0-for-23 stretch and, you know, got a base hit yesterday to finally, you know, get off of the Schneid there. But I'm just not in a great place with Crawford in terms of his, I think, long-term, I guess, sustainability as a hitter in this lineup. And the defense hasn't been great. I know he made that play on Machado yesterday, and it was a nice play, but, I mean, it had a 70% catch percentage or catch probability. So I think that he's in a spot right now where they're giving him runway, and I think that is the right decision. But if they're at the trade deadline and they're right-handed outfield bats that, you know, can play one of the corner outfield spots and you move Marsh to center, like, I think that's probably the route that you have to go. So I think you give him until maybe the end of July, early August to see if this is going to work out. But I just don't love what I see from Crawford right now from a standpoint of, you know, lifting the ball into the air, pulling the ball on a consistent basis, and just being, you know, sort of a reliable big league hitter. And they kind of need it because they can't just start wasting spots in the lineup because it's not good enough. So they're in a spot where they are going to have to really evaluate this thing by, I think, end of July trade deadline time, because we're obviously in a window with this staff where I think if you trade for the right piece or two, you're very much in the World Series picture. And I understand the Dodgers are the Dodgers, and there are some good teams in the National League. The Braves are in there as well. But, you know, with Wheeler, with Sanchez, and with Lizardo at the top of your rotation, you can go win multiple playoff series and get to the World Series. Like, I will not come off of that unless they have some sort of epic collapse here, because that's the type of things that can, you know, you can dominate other teams like that. And I just think that with them at the top of the rotation, there's no reason why you shouldn't be buying at the deadline. So, you know, I don't know if it's Mike Trout. I don't know if it's Byron Buxton. I don't know who it is exactly. Randy Rosarena could be in there. I've heard some first baseman mentioned potentially, where Bryce would move back to the outfield. Christian Walker, I heard, was in there. Wilson Contreras from the Red Sox is in there. So interesting names for sure as the season kind of develops here. But I think they really do have to evaluate the Crawford thing in its totality by the end of July. So we will keep monitoring that situation. But want to get to the bullpen, because there has been a discussion on Twitter that has really been, like, irking me. And it's something that I don't understand. Maybe it's just we've gotten too spoiled, or we misremember Brad Lidge's 08 a little bit. I know we didn't blow a save, but there were some, you know, high wire acts from Brad Lidge. Like, let's not forget that. Joan Duran is a top 3 to 5 closer in all of baseball. And for those who are, you know, discouraged by some of the hard hit balls and whatnot, like, what are we talking about? I mean, his strikeout rate is fine. Like, it has been, he struck out, I think, at least two batters in, like, his last, you know, I think it just dropped off a little bit, but before the last couple of outings, he has struck out, like, a bunch of batters in his last few outings. And ultimately, he is somebody that is a top 3 to 5 closer in baseball. And yes, there are some hard hit balls, and I understand that can be frustrating sometimes, but he is the third best save rate in Major League Baseball history with a minimum of 100 chances. That's history, not this year. That is all time. And like, I've just watched way too much Brandon Workman and Corey Knebel and guys like that over the years who were so unreliable back there. He hasn't blown a save yet this year. I understand that the Manzardo homer last weekend was annoying in the tie game. I understand that. I understand the entrance, you know, when they're losing or they're tied can be annoying. I understand it. I actually think that they probably should change that. Only save opportunities, you do the entrance. So I think I'm in on that. But just some of the talk around Joan Duran, not being sure if he's like a guy. Like, he's not Mason Miller. Nobody in the game is Mason Miller. And we're just in a spot where I think we're a little spoiled with what we got with Joan Duran. And he's under contract next year too, which is unbelievable. So I am here to defend Joan Duran, because what is going on in some of these conversations, I think, is just absolutely brutal. So I appreciate Joan Duran. He's one of the best closers in the game. And I think that for a town that has always wanted us like a staple closer in the back of the bullpen since the run in 22, like, we have one. And I think it's a major reason why they, I mentioned the rotation in a couple of minutes ago. That's another reason why they can go on a run in the postseason, is you pretty much, you know, 9 times out of 10 have the ninth inning locked down. So that's a major thing that not every team has. And again, I think everyone's just comparing him to Mason Miller. Like, Mason Miller is not a human. He essentially strikes out all three hitters every time he comes into the game. So I understand that he is great, and he is the best closer in baseball right now. But Duran is top five. You could make an argument for top three. So I kind of don't want to hear that anymore. So just had to get that off of my chest there. But a couple other takes with the bullpen. Keller, pretty frustrating. Like, I heard Jack Fritz say this on his podcast, and I feel like it's pretty accurate. He's going to be somebody where he'll come in, he'll have a couple good outings, but once a week he's going to give up a brutal homer where everyone just goes back to saying, oh, Brad Keller, get him off the team. Like, because I think he was also just so good in the second half of last year. He only allowed one earned run after the All-Star break, where I think a lot of people just thought he was going to be a shutdown eighth inning guy to get to Duran. And it's kind of clear that he's not that, I think, at this point, where just too many hard hit balls in play. And I think that he's somebody that ultimately is going to need some defense behind him to be able to get out of some innings there. But a little frustrating for sure, because it just feels like the patience is starting to run thin with Brad Keller there. But Kirkring's been good. Like, I think he has been really reliable out of the bullpen as a right-hander. And in an ideal world, you would love him to be the third right-handed arm behind Duran and behind Keller. But he's, you know, quickly turning into the second leverage righty. So we'll see how that sort of develops throughout the rest of the season. But speaking of righties, like, I thought that John Bolin had a good outing on Wednesday in San Diego. Like, his fastball is real. Like, I think that that could potentially, you know, play in the back of the bullpen, you know, once he continues to develop here. But I mean, that's heavy sink on the 97 mile an hour fastball. And that's something that in, you know, this day and age is going to play well out of the bullpen. So was an encouraging sign from him. Alvarado got the save. That was good to see. I don't think he's like cooked now, but I still have my concerns with Alvarado for sure. And it feels like the other lefties are sort of, you know, iffy at best. The Mesa run is over. The Tanner Banks run is over. So they might be looking for a left-handed reliever potentially at the trade deadline as well. But yeah, I mean, I liked what, how could he not like what he saw in San Diego ultimately? I know that the offense wasn't the best, but they did get Randy Vasquez for a few homers. They were hitting bombs, like I will say. They didn't have a single homer in the Guardian series, and then they were just hitting homers left and right against the Padres there. So that was good to see. Always good for a sweep. And as they go to LA this weekend as well, you know, transition to the preview here, is it too much just to ask for 1 of 3? Like, I would have felt good if you had told me that they go 4-2 on this road trip. And now that they, you know, swept, obviously you'd love 2 of 3 in LA, but I would take 1 and 3, I think. And with Wheeler pitching on Friday, you have a chance to do that. So, like I just said, Friday at 10:15 on Apple TV. Make sure, you know, you know where to find the ball game there. It's Wheeler versus Justin Robleski, who got off to a good start this year, but has gotten roughed up in his last few outings. I think he's given up like 5 earned and 7 earned in 2 of his last 3. So Hopefully they can get to him there, and that's the ball game you'd really like to win because you have the pitching advantage with Wheeler, who, again, last year against did not get to pitch last year against the Dodgers in the division series, so you know that's probably in the back of his mind there. Saturday, 10-10, you've got Andrew Painter, who this is a really big test for him coming off of a couple good outings. He's really, it seems like, made some adjustments since the, you know, shelling against the A's. Going up against Roky Sasaki, and Sasaki owes this one, man, because he has been super inconsistent as a starter so far, and it feels like he's got some durability issues and sort of some command issues as well. And he just, as a closer, absolutely shoved against us in the postseason last year. So that kind of came out of nowhere, and that was a big part of why the Dodgers ended up winning the World Series. But it feels like he owes the Phillies one because he was just absolutely unbelievable in that postseason last year. And hopefully, you know, they can get to him this time. And it's all about patience with him. He's just way in and out of the zone all the time, super inconsistent from that perspective. And you just got to learn to lay off and, you know, take your walks. And eventually he's going to give you a little cookie in the zone that'll be able to, you know, do some damage, hopefully. So you got Sasaki against Painter on Saturday. And then on Sunday, to wrap up the series at 4:10, you've got Lizardo versus Yamamoto, which is a really good pitching matchup. It should be fun. Yamamoto, didn't even mention him in that Cy Young conversation there, but he has been money so far this year, and he is just insanely talented. So it'll be a tough series. It'll be a good test. I know Teoscar Hernandez just landed on the IL, which I guess is good for the Phillies there, but you know, they're going to have their work cut out for him. So we will see how that goes. But thank you, as always, for tuning in. That'll wrap it up for this edition of Phillies Today. Hopefully they get 2 of 3. We'll take 1 of 3, but for Phillies 24/7, this has been Justin Morgenstein, and we'll talk next week. Have a good one. See ya.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.